Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to all of you for still being here on, you know, for the last presentation of this workshop. It's a great privilege, and I want to thank the organizers of the conference for inviting me to speak on behalf of the Electronic Publishing Trust for Development, of which I'm a trustee. So I'll just briefly introduce myself, because I think I wear sometimes very many different hats. So I've been a science editor for the better part of my life, my career, and starting, of course, in 1996, as Madam Chair said, up to the present, as you, if you like. But in the meanwhile, I've done a few other things. I've served with CIMIT. If some of you might know it, it's a maize and wheat research center based in Mexico, but has a big office in Nairobi. And I've also served quite recently as a consultant on open access for UNESCO. But currently, my day job is managing a communications program for IAVI, International AIDS Vaccine Initiative. So I'm going to speak a little bit about the Electronic Publishing Trust's thoughts about how open access can basically change the landscape of scientific publishing and even scientific research in this part of the continent. And I'll give some examples. Unfortunately, there are not very many examples from Africa itself, because open access is still poorly established in this on this continent. But I'll give examples from developing country situations about what open access has done for researchers and for journal publishers. Okay. So, of course, the world's knowledge needs no introduction. There's a vast amount of different disciplines, and but, you know, in Africa, basically, we concentrate on health, agriculture, the immediate priorities, biodiversity, technology, and social science, and, of course, cultural knowledge, which is very important. And I would like to argue at the get-go that Africa has a lot of knowledge that maybe is yet to be discovered. There's possibly cures for, you know, diseases and so on in our perhaps vegetables. Climate change is no longer a local issue, and what happens here, of course, affects the entire globe. So it's just to argue what you know, people have long called local research that is not internationally relevant. Perhaps it is. Perhaps people just need to realize that what happens here has implications not only regionally or locally, but increasingly globally. I'll give you a quick example. When I was working with CIMIT, the wheat researchers, there was discovered a new pathogen. Well, it was an old pathogen that was making a resurgence in Uganda. And this was a very, very huge deal, because this pathogen actually causes stem rust. This is a disease that can wipe out entire wheat crops. And, you know, there was huge stem rust epidemics, if you like, in the U.S., perhaps in the 1900s and early 1900s, before the researchers bred stem rust-resistant varieties. And this was a very big deal, because if it emerged in Uganda, it was very possible that it would find its way through people's shoes, and people are traveling all over the world, into Italy, into the U.S., into Turkey, and the big wheat producers. So it became a global issue, which had started with a small, you know, field site in, I forget the name of the small locality in the hills of Uganda. So that's just, I want to say that as an introduction. So, and as we've heard, I don't need to repeat that there's a huge information gap, because access to journals has been closed. Of course, increasingly it's becoming more open, but still not enough, if you ask me. And then African researchers, and of course other developing country researchers, have too long been isolated from the world, you know, in terms of sharing their knowledge and accessing knowledge from elsewhere. And that means that it's an we have an incomplete global knowledge base, which is not a very healthy situation. If there's an outbreak of swine flu or bird flu in Nairobi, I think the world needs to know very quickly. And, you know, if we know how to deal with it, we need to share that information very quickly. Another reason is, of course, I think I'm going to be repeating a lot of what people have said, but I'm going to try and go fast so that you're not hearing the same thing many times over. Of course, poorly resourced local research. The governments, of course, in Africa, at least Kenya, has many, many other priorities, food, security, health issues. And it seems that publishing is considered as a luxury, which, as we all know, is not. You know, Susan showed that the quotes from John Dixon were very, true. I mean, that publishing is not a luxury. Scientific research is not a luxury. So, and of course, there's also weak scholarly publishing for many different reasons, capacity, funding, and so on. And then, of course, the low expansion of open access is also contributing to the north-south, south-north, and south-south information gaps. So I just want to show two quick slides here. I think maybe you may have seen them in previous presentations. Oh, I'm sorry. So anyway, this slide, which I got from Dr. Sahu, who publishes journals in India, it just shows that this is the vicious circle of scholarly publishing in Africa that we need to break. So as long as you have limited circulation, you have poor visibility. Poor visibility if nobody is seeing your research, poor recognition, fewer citations, and of course, nobody wants to publish in journals that are not being going out there. So you get fewer authors. No subscribers are going to subscribe if they know that it's just going to reach 100 people, for example. And so we are trapped here in this vicious circle of, poor visibility and submissions and editorial quality and so on and so forth. And we would like to argue that at the center of this vicious circle is limited visibility, or invisibility sometimes, if you like, especially when you're on a print-only mode. So, and of course, I'm not going to repeat that the two routes to open access that we are talking about are both the gold route and the green route, so which has been elaborated quite effectively here. Yeah, so these two slides that I'm going to show you is that just the very the invisibility, if you like, of African research, especially scientific research. If you look at that figure there, it's 1% for the Middle East and Africa, which is quite shocking, actually, when you see the Web of Science. But this is Thomson Reuters, so perhaps it's flawed, but still it gives you a pause for thought. Okay, and then this is the map of repository coverage. I guess other speakers have shown it. And you can see that Africa is almost blank, as apart from South Africa. South Africa is doing pretty well. But the rest of the continent still needs to catch up. And in terms of institutional repositories, which, of course, provide the green route to open access. Yeah. So the main part of my talk will be trying to say, to tell what I think and what the Electronic Publishing Trust for Development thinks that, about how open access can help research and scholarly publishing in Africa. So from medical research, from crop research, from all sorts of other knowledge that we have and research is being done in Africa. So, So in terms of benefits to researchers, open access, I think, is it's a fact that it increases visibility. And by doing so, it removes researchers' isolation because, you know, of course, when you're out there, when you're online, you will get picked up one way or the other, maybe by a Google search or whatever. And hopefully you will also get cited. Yeah, so, visibility goes, of course, with citations and so on. So this slide just shows you statistics from BioLine International. This is another aggregator of developing country research. It's similar to African Journals Online, but BioLine does only open access. So I would like to show you just that bit of the slide, just to show how quickly the full text requests have been on this site. So on this site, yeah. So these are journals from developing countries, and you can see that there's about 70 of them on BioLine right now, and 4 million full text requests in 2008. I don't have the later statistics than that, but I think the growth is phenomenal, just to prove the point that open access is raising the visibility of developing country research. And then with visibility, hopefully comes citations. So I would like to show you this slide. Well, this is a chemist in Australia. His name is Ray Frost. And he monitors very closely who is citing him and so on. And of course, he's a prolific author. And these two tables show how, after putting his work in a repository at the University of Queensland, citations have just basically taken off to his work, because you can see that in terms of number of publications, there's not very much growth, but this other graph is basically shooting up. So this is Australia, this is not Kenya, but this is open access, which is a global phenomenon. So maybe the same can happen, especially for good quality papers. The other thing that open access does, and this is for researchers, we think that open access fosters collaboration and stimulates research, because when authors are out online, people are able to find them, people working in similar fields, and seek collaborations. In fact, my own presence here came from online, I think. I don't know, Ruth found me in some way. Because I was online, I was not online, shall we say. Yeah, and increasingly collaborations are only going to be initiated by people being online, papers being online. Your work needs to be online. And then, of course, collaborative research is much better resourced than isolated research, and is often interdisciplinary. And by extension, if it's interdisciplinary, it's going to be cited by a broader group of people. Okay. And then collaboration also brings with it mentorship, because researchers from different, experience levels, shall we say, come together. And so if I'm a junior researcher and I'm collaborating with some senior researcher at Harvard, I mean, I would have to work very hard not to write a paper, okay, and get it published, because I'll be gaining that kind of mentorship. And of course, it reduces duplication, because people know what others are doing. Okay, yeah. Another thing that open access promotes is authorship. I've just talked about this, so I'm not going to repeat that. So in terms of summary of open access benefits to researchers, it starts with the removal of that isolation of African researchers. And all these other things, follow from the fact that researchers are no longer going to be isolated. Okay, and then I would like to talk very briefly also about open access benefits to journals. But of course, research is the lifeblood of journals, yeah? So if research is supported, automatically journals are supported. And I think some of the problems that journals in Africa have is that this science base that, you know, is struggling, and sometimes the good research is published elsewhere, and so we end up with the papers maybe that have been rejected from the big journals in the West. And so once African research is promoted, I think journals will also be promoted. And I would like to just perhaps present a few examples of how we see journals being supported by open access. So without good quality manuscripts, journals are going to continue struggling as they've done. The issue one, volume one, issue one syndrome is not going to end, because sometimes journals have no manuscripts. I mean, it's real. I mean, some of the papers that I edit for the journal that I publish, perhaps they should, if there were better manuscripts, they wouldn't publish them. But because the issue has to come out, then it has to be published. So more manuscripts mean better African journals. I mean, there's no debate about that. Okay? And it's harder and more time-consuming to publish poor papers. Yeah, because you have to send them through several cycles of peer review, and then you have to edit them, you have to rewrite them, some of them basically, and then go back and forth with authors, you know, and so on and so forth. So I think African journals are having a much harder time publishing than Western journals, if you ask me. Okay, so I just said that with researchers supported, African journals will have a much easier time, and I think they will flourish. Okay, so open access basically removes this isolation also of journals, you know, the visibility issue. And with visibility, sorry, just don't mind my little red marks there. I think some of them don't make sense. But with increased visibility, more subscriptions are going to come. And once you break part of that vicious circle, the benefit to the journal arises basically. So it's going to cut these two visibility issues and subscription and authorship issues, which is of course related to the researchers' stimulation. And this slide here shows this is a slide from India, from Medno, this big publisher of journals. Some of them open access, and this is just a few of their journals. I think they publish something like 400 journals. It's a huge number of journals. And they've found that articles are increasing for all their journals. Maybe there are some for which it's not increasing, but this statistic is what I have, just by going open access. And another thing that is also interesting is that more international papers were coming in when journals went open access, so that you are not just limited to your immediate, your immediate vicinity in terms of authors. So you can see that these are several different journals, and the red part is papers from outside. I think there's no comparison for this graph. They should show us actually what happened before things went open access. But anyway, this is a slide showing that Indian journals are receiving more international manuscripts, and maybe Kenyan journals, Ugandan journals will receive more international manuscripts by going open access. Okay, this is also another slide about in terms of citations, and citations are going up thanks to open access. And my point basically is that African journals, once they go online, they might see the same type of graphs. Okay, so by doing so, open access can basically improve a journal's stability, because it gives you more papers, it gives you a wider geographical base from which you draw manuscripts. And I think your institution becomes happier with you, and if they have any funding to spare, they maybe will send it your way. Okay, because you can show that you're actually having some impact. Okay, so a big question that has been, I'm just going to forward back that. A big issue, I think, as many people will attest here, for African journals trying to think about going on open access has been sustainability, the sustainability issue. And this is, of course, a big issue. But I would like to argue that Africans are also the world's greatest adapters of technology. I mean, we've seen the mobile phone, you know, like the curves basically went off the graph. But I think journals have reasons maybe to try and see, okay, so what does this open access mean to us? And how are we going to, you know, sustain ourselves, if you like? Because people have said, you know, that if you go online, then nobody will want your print subscriptions. But it seems that maybe the opposite is, maybe it's not, it's just a myth, if you ask me. Okay, because authors can, journals can raise money through many different ways. They can charge author fees, which of course means institutional fees. It's not the author that is coming out from their pocket with some money. They can, and author fees can be embedded in the research, you know, chain, basically. Like if you're applying for a grant, apply for also money to publish your article. Advertising, web income, sponsorship. A lot of journals are basically society journals. Special issues. I know a couple of journals that, you know, sustain themselves quite decently by publishing special issues from, you know, groups, maybe conferences and so on. And then, of course, open access does not prevent you from continuing to do your printing and asking people to pay for it, and also selling reprints. Okay, so this is a slide from India again. Journals losing print subscriptions. Apparently not. Okay, but this is an Indian. It's from India. So we need a case study, I think, in Africa of a journal that started at the baseline, went open access, and we need to really see, because this is a different reality that we are in. But there is the slide. Maybe you don't, and you're not going to lose print subscriptions. Sometimes libraries still want a hard copy to keep in their library, you know, for future use. This is a cartoon. I hope you can read it. This is to argue that open access can improve editorial quality. And so this cartoon is called The Politician. And this guy is asking him, have you got your speech for the teachers' conference? And he said, no, I don't need to, because I always get booed off stage before I get the chance to speak. So he didn't prepare it. But anyway, maybe it's a bit of a long shot. But my point with this cartoon is that when we are recognized and when people actually are seeing what we are doing, we actually do a better job. We try to do a better job. Yeah, that when I know that my whatever I'm editing is going to be accessed by the whole world, I'm going to put in a bit more effort than if it's just going to be within my office, for example. Yeah, so maybe it's a bit of a long shot, but so in terms of summary, I know I have like 2 minutes left. These are the benefits that open access can bring to journals. And the last point I would like to make is that open access can also serve as a diagnostic tool for journals, so that if you have a flu, of course, you go and see the doctor. And now the journal, the open access can help you really take a hard look at your journal, you know, by looking at web metrics. It can serve all these people. Journals can see. So yes, we can, but we need to raise awareness, as you know, we are trying to do. For example, in this workshop, develop policies. I think this has been talked about. We need to also provide information about how to go about it, you know, if people are ready to go open access, and then fundraise. You know, maybe we need to get a pool of money to support several African journals to go open access and go, use best practices to go open access. This is the number five is my own. I think a lot of open access movements have a declaration, so I don't see why we shouldn't have a Nairobi declaration of open access. Okay, and the last point is that government support is very important, and especially in Kenya, I don't know if about many other countries maybe that are not in Africa, the government has been, I think some of those rules need to be revised in terms of who disseminates information. Is it the researcher? Is it the communications department at the Ministry of Health? And, you know, what can a researcher disseminate? Can they upload their data sets to the web? Or is that not allowed? But I think we need some unambiguous information from our government about government-funded information. So I'm done. Okay, one last slide is that we can learn from other people. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. This is the African Applying Science. Oh, dear. How do you say that?
Academy of Science of South Africa.
Yes, Academy of Science of South Africa. They have a very beautiful scholarly publishing project that Susan Veldman is running. And they're doing it and they're learning lessons. And so we have a model that we could basically import here in Kenya and also in the rest of the world. So we don't need to basically reinvent the wheel. Okay, so lastly, I'll just show you a few just for the presentation. When it goes up on the web, you can click on some of these links and learn a bit more about some of the developing country journal OA initiatives for journals, and a few more useful websites. And I'd like to acknowledge my fellow trustees, Leslie, Barbara, and Arun. And I borrow a few slides from Dr. Sahu of Medno. And thank you so much for your kind attention.